Hey, book lovers, we want you to know that Libro.fm is the best place to buy your audiobooks because it allows you to buy from your favorite local and independent bookstore. You can choose from more than 150,000 audiobook titles and get recommendations from booksellers around the country, all for the same price as that other company. You know which one I'm talking about. Except with Libro.fm, you'll be part of a different story, one that supports community. And as always, listeners of the Bookstore Podcast can get 2 months for the price of one when they use our new promo code bookstorepod, all one word, at checkout at Libro.fm. That's Libro.fm. With each listen, take pride in knowing you're supporting local bookstores.
Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I'm Becca.
And I am Corinne. And this week is the first week our first recording of September, and our September challenge was to read a book that takes place on another planet or another dimension. My choice was Present Tense Machine by Gunhild Øyehaug, and I originally found this book because I read a collection of short stories by her earlier this year called Evil Flowers, and that was recommended by Catherine Lacey, who also has a blurb on the back of this book. And I love Catherine Lacey, so it turns out that she has not steered me wrong here, because I liked Evil Flowers and wound up here at Present Tense Machine, which may or may not have wound up thrusting Becca into another dimension. We're not entirely sure. Maybe we'll talk about it a little bit.
Yeah.
But that is, I don't know that we have any news. Oh, wait, we do have one new Patreon patron.
Oh,
so
yay.
This episode is dedicated to Sunny. Thank you for supporting us on Patreon. If you are interested in supporting us on Patreon as well, you can do that at patreon.com/thebookstore. Over there, we are working on a series of exclusive episodes called I'm Never Going to Read That, in which one of us reads a book that we never thought we would read and then explains it in extreme detail to the other who has not read it.
Mm-hmm.
We did a series of that on It Ends With Us by Colleen Hoover, and we are currently working on a series from Left Behind, which is the Christian apocalyptic story from like the late 90s early aughts. We need to get on recording another one of those, but you could find a backlog of some of those episodes there. Yeah, that's our Patreon. I guess we maybe don't talk about it as much as we should. So there,
yeah.
I've done it.
Yes. you mentioned what we're talking about today. Our
yes.
next prompt, which is the one that I picked, this is the read a book about a different planet or an alternate dimension. My pick is Babel 17 by Samuel R. Delaney. This is, I believe it's set on a spaceship, and I think it's also about the Sapir-Whorf linguistic theory that your language determines how you think, which is not in any way like accepted by the majority of linguists, I don't think.
Right.
It's not like universal, but I think it's really interesting. One of our favorite movies, Arrival, is based on this theory. But it's also funny because I think Present Tense Machine sort of talks a lot about language and how that influences us.
I was just going to say that too.
It's like I think we maybe like the same things too much because we both picked our things totally separate, and they're both books are going to be kind of similar in some of the things they talk about, which is really funny to me. But
yes.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
For Babel 17, it is available on Hoopla for, I think, both our libraries, maybe. So if you're in the United States, maybe you might be able to get it on Hoopla. Other than that, you know, local library, bookstore, what have you. And then I also want to mention coming up is November. November is usually like a nonfiction November, I think, for like the wider book world. Our prompt is to read a book about death or disaster. So that could be nonfiction, but it can also be fiction. We don't have ours picked out yet, I don't believe.
I think I have mine picked out.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm doing fiction, even though I expected myself to choose nonfiction book, but you know, here we are. So yeah, so I think what I want to do, and this is probably going to be what it is, but it's not like 100% set in stone, but Death with Interruptions by Jose Saramago.
Oh yeah,
it's like, I think it's told from possibly from the perspective of death, but it's basically what happens if people stop dying.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
I've never read one of his books. So
oh yeah, I really like Saramago. I've read a couple of his books, but yeah, so that's something you can look forward to. As always, you can find our prompts on the Story Graph. If you go to the challenges and search the Bookstore Challenge 2023, you can see the books that Becca and I have added to the challenge that we think fit each prompt, and books that other readers have added that they've been reading or think fit the prompt as well. So that's a great place for ideas if you're looking for ideas, if any of these interest you, of course. And one final thing I wanted to say about the Patreon, October is a 3 Tuesday month, so we will have an extra book this month. Yes, so we will be posting a poll. I think we had decided on an Ursula K. Le Guin book, and then maybe we had talked about something else. But anyway, I think I'll probably post that poll today. So it should be up by the time you're listening to this episode, yeah. Which is late, by the way, because Becca and I were in Chicago. So
we're probably also going to do a little Patreon episode about what we did in Chicago. And because we were both reading Present Tense Machine, yeah, like on the train there, that's when we'll kind of go into more about my time space, yeah, the disruption in my time space continuum.
All right. Finally, we can get to the discussion of the book. So our standard content and spoiler warnings. I think this book is pretty safe in terms of content warnings, but you can always find our content and spoiler warnings for the episode in our show notes. As you may know, if you've been listening to the show, spoilers, we can't always know what we're going to say exactly, and they are sometimes unavoidable when we are having a book club like discussion. So we do our best to warn you for any big ones. It's always safest to read the book before you listen to an episode if spoilers are something that you are majorly concerned about. All right.
Okay.
I will say, so Present Tense Machine was published first in Norway, in Norwegian, in 2018 by Colin Forlag. I apologize to the Norwegian. And it was translated by Carrie Dixon, which and that translation was published in 2022 in the US by FSG.
So the book is set in Norway. We follow two women, Laura and Anna, or Anna, probably. When Laura was a toddler, her mother, Anna, read a word wrong in a book of poems. And this misreading of the word basically pulls Anna out of her present universe into a new one. And in this new universe, she is not Laura's mother. She doesn't have any kids. But other than that, everything is the same. So she does experience a feeling of like missing something. And she tells, I think, her mom that she dreamt that she had a child. But other than that, she went on to live a normal life, get married, have kids. Laura also went on to live a normal life, other than the fact that she didn't know who her mother was, and her father, Bård, didn't know either. So Bård basically comes home and there's a toddler. And I think we'll talk, I don't know, maybe we can talk about this now. Did he know that that was his daughter? Okay.
Yes, he did. But because he knew that she existed and he had her, but it was like, I think it was just like, I don't know, it was kind of like one of those magical things where it was like their brains couldn't even really approach thinking, yes, about the fact that she ever had a mother, if that makes sense. It was like, it was just like Anna just never existed, and that the two of them always Laura always existed, at least, you know, for her life of, you know, a couple of years or whatever. But like, it was like their brains just could never reach a point where they ever thought about
it. I think that was the part. It's funny because it does focus a little bit on Bård, but not as much as on Anna and Laura. And I think he had the freakiest experience because he, like, how does the child get here? And also the fact that, like, it would be different if a mother randomly had a child versus a father, because obviously, like, if you're a mother, you know you were pregnant. You know what I mean? And so, I don't know.
Right. And also, I mean, the way that the book positions it, which is like, if he was at home, right? Like if he had just been at home and Anna, the mother, disappeared, you know, like that would be one thing. But he comes home yeah. and a toddler is just there alone, which is like very, that's like, that would be very disturbing to have happen. But I don't know. They didn't really explain that away. But I think there was one part where, you know, it was kind of like, well, where were you, you know, like when this happened or something? And it was like, you know, she was at her grandparents' house or something yeah. like that, like while he was on that trip. But I don't know. Yeah, there's an extreme dreamlike quality to the way that all of this happens that I found very effective, because I don't know, a lot of times, like when I will have a dream, like a really, really real feeling dream, and then I wake up, and as that dream starts to dissipate and I start to, like, you know, remember my reality, it feels like a weird grieving process in a way, where like you're kind of feeling like all of the dream dissolve, and you're trying mm-hmm. to like grasp on to what was there to remember it. And that's kind of what it felt like when Anna when in her world Laura disappears, it's like, it's almost like deja vu, but like so strong. I don't know. I found all of that description like really effective for me. It was like I'd felt something like that before.
Recently, I have been feeling such intense, strong deja vu. And I understand it's all about like your brain is like mixing up the past and the future or whatever. You know, it's just like remembering something that's already happened, but like mm-hmm. so strong that I've like stopped in the middle of a sentence because I'm positive that I already talked to this person about it. As right. much as I think sometimes, like, especially when you're getting into sci-fi and fantasy, like genre fiction, people put way too much emphasis, authors, I mean, on like dreams meaning something, you know? But in this book, I think it reminded right. me right. of how, like, I don't know, kind of creepy and freaky dreams can be, because we don't totally understand how our brains work. And that's exactly the feeling I got. Right. And I should say, I loved this book. I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, I think it's most effective at like those feelings that I think we've had before that we can't really explain or put a finger on. But they're also, those feelings mm-hmm. tend to be like really temporary, you know, but like while you're having them, they can be super intense. So like when Anna reads the word incorrectly and looks up and Laura is gone, of course she doesn't even really realize that Laura ever existed, aside from like this lingering feeling that something is missing. You know, she goes and she calls her mother and she's like, yeah. I think I've had a stroke. And like, not that I've ever thought I've had a stroke, but there are times where it's very shocking when whatever it was you were feeling in your dream or whatever it happens to be, it felt so, so real. And then to be shaken out of it really quickly can be really yeah, disturbing to have like that dissonance. So I don't know. I loved the fact that it could have even been invoked like at all in a book. And I think this did,
I mean,
really,
it
really
reminded
well.
Me too, and I think everybody's experienced it, I hope so, what I'm about to say is just like you're driving along and then all of a sudden you get this feeling that like, how did I even get here? Like, how am I in this car? Like, what are the choices yeah. that I made in my life to like be here? And I think that, I mean, I don't know that this book needs to have an overall meaning. I don't really think that it does. But like, if it did, I would say possibly that's it, is yeah. like these tiny little things that we do. We don't even know what the real impact is. But also, does it really matter? And mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess that's, I like that. 'Cause I don't believe in like, you know, predestination, obviously, or any kind of like, you need to do, you know, the universe right. will tell you what to do or anything like that. It's all just sort of random. And I don't know. I think this book kind of delved into that a little bit too.
Yeah.
But I would say most of this book is just like two people going along their daily life, which I would say I can, yeah. it's one of those books where yeah, I can,
it is.
I haven't read any reviews at all, much less the bad ones, but I can kind of see already what the criticism would be. And I do kind of understand it, because really nothing happened. Sure. And I do think that if this was like 20 pages mm-hmm. longer, it would have been too long for me.
It's quite short and it reads really quickly. Oh, we should talk, because I agree with you. I haven't read the bad reviews. This doesn't have great reviews. It's sitting at like a 3.6 or something on Goodreads, which I feel like is at the low end of good reviews, you know? But I think that is kind of how Olya Haug's books hit in general. I think she is a writer for people who like her. this is not like for the masses. I don't necessarily think. But we should also talk about the construction of this book, in which there is a third person narrator who knows everything about these two women and who sometimes interjects and talks about her own life a little bit, but like also never really explains who she is or where she is, except for that sometimes it creeps in and it seems like maybe something big has happened in the world, or maybe she's writing from a completely different dimension from the two women's lives entirely also, which I thought was really kind of funny and fascinating at the same time.
I definitely thought, is this over my head? Am I just not getting it? But I didn't mind that at all. And I like the idea of the narrator being part of yet another universe, because I think that's the idea, right? Is like, we don't even know how many alternate universes like there could be. At first I thought maybe the narrator was Alina, who is Anna's daughter, because of some things that Alina says at the end. Here's a spoiler, is that at the end Alina is determined that she's going to save everybody. And then she's going to touch everybody on the head and say, saved, 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 which is like, I mean, it's so one of those things where like, if it's done in the wrong way, I can think that's like corny. But this book did it in like exactly the right way to where I really loved how it ended, because I do love an open-ended ending. But yeah, so I thought maybe the narrator was Alina, like grown up. And looking back, but I also just love the idea that this, you know, narrator has some, with the wet boots, wet feet, has managed to be able to see something has happened in, again, time-space continuum, where she's able to see these different threads of the universe.
Well, you could be right, because Alina's like big preoccupation is climate change, it seems. We don't get a ton of time with Alina. This book is only like 145 pages long, and the chapters are short. So we're not getting like a whole lot of time with her at all. But she does at times become very preoccupied with like some of the effects of climate change, and she is worried about them, but also she feels like at certain times she'll be sitting on the bus and she'll be looking around and all of these people seem sad to her, and she'll say inside of her head, like to them, and because she feels it and she believes it, that you will be okay, you will be okay. And yeah, when you said that the narrator's boots are always wet, like, is that because of a climate change situation? I think there's also times when the narrator talks about how it's really, really foggy there. So it sort of seems like this world that like doesn't, I don't know, like that hasn't completely formed, but also maybe it's a world that's in the ravage, or like in the I don't know, the aftermath of like something that's, you know, torn it apart in a way. So yeah, I don't know, it's just it's such a inconsequential sort of like in terms of like the majority of the book kind of thing, but I don't know, it was just a fascinating little thing. Like every time it came up, I was just reminded, like, oh yeah, what's this all about?
Because of that, I kind of liked making connections in the book to like us. So the wet boots thing reminded me of how you were telling me about that conversation you had with a coworker who was looking for boots and they're not in the stores, and then the narrator is like, oh, yeah, the boot, whenever there's boots that come into the stores, they're always sold out. And then there's another thread through the whole book of this piece of music by Erik Satie, and it's called Vexations, and it's essentially like the same, look, I don't know anything about classical music, the same bars, the same tune, like done, what, 180 times or something like that. And so you can have these huge concerts where like you have multiple performers and they all play the same thing.
They kind of do. I think they call it a relay So kind of like a relay race where someone comes in and they'll do their portion of it and then they pass it off and then the next person picks up because it's the same bars over and over again. So in the book, at least, the way that they do this is that like at different times, different communities of musicians will do like these marathon versions. So like 24 straight hours of these same, I don't know, 12 bars.
And if anybody out there is into the Velvet Underground, John Cale has actually played this piece, this Eric Satie Vexations piece before. No, he was just a part of one of these, like one out of 80, okay. 184 oh, okay. people gotcha, or whatever, gotcha. You know. And so I just, I don't know that, I mean, John Cale, it makes yeah. sense because he's quite an experimental musician. But I don't know. I just thought that was interesting too. And it's always, I mean, I think sometimes when books use real life things, it can kind of take you out of it. But in this case, I really liked it that Eric mm-hmm. Satie was a real person. I had never heard of him before. Sorry to the classical music people. And that piece of music yeah. is a real piece. And also that is how it is performed a lot of times with that relay that you were saying. So I don't know. I liked that too because it yeah. kind of did. It did in like make that dream quality like more real using that piece.
And it's also, I mean, I don't know exactly what it's a metaphor for, but like I feel like it could be, you know, a metaphor for the way that like life just exists, that we're just kind of like stitching all of this together, and that, you know, like that piece gets stitched together by all of these people playing the same things over and over again. And then it, you know, does it matter if someone makes a mistake in it? Not necessarily, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly like thematically what it has to do with the rest of the book, or even if it does have anything to do with it, or if I'm just reaching, but it's an interesting project to take on in general. And it's, so it's interesting that it, I mean, it must mean something because why have it in this book?
Well, but. And I did think it was interesting. So Laura and Anna both were part of playing this piece. Anna backs out at the last second. Anna, again, Laura's mother. So she doesn't do it. Mm-hmm. She's like 15 and she's like, I can't do it. Whereas, and so she's thinking about it. Like she periodically thinks about how she backed out throughout her life. Whereas Laura did get a chance, also got a chance to play that piece as a teen and did play it and doesn't even think about it again until she's like viewing mm-hmm. new apartments with her husband. And that,
and that's the apartment she disappeared from in the other yes. world, isn't
and
it?
And that piece of music yes. is on the piano. And that's when like she actually like remembers it. And I thought that was, I mean, that to me, I guess you could say it is, it's more like, okay, the things that you don't do is what you remember. Whereas Laura mm-hmm. did it and it really didn't mean anything to her for the longest time.
Yeah.
Not that that has any like, again, overall meaning, but it was just something that I thought was interesting.
Did you think, spoilers again, did you think that like maybe them playing it at the same time in their alternate worlds would somehow bring them back
well,
to each other?
I wondered, because doesn't Anna like see a pregnant woman mm-hmm. that might be Laura? Mm-hmm. It felt like it was sort of possibly leading to like the fabric of the two universes is getting thin and they right. can possibly go yeah. in and out of the two of them.
You know, it's funny thinking about like books that don't have a concrete ending. And I know that like it drives some people nuts, like truly nuts, but I don't, it's, sometimes I like it better, I think.
I mean, it depends on like the subject. Like if somebody is about to be mm-hmm. the big bad villain and then you don't find out if they do or not, like that would be very frustrating. Yeah. But with something right. like this, I mean, especially with something like this, like the whole point is like you don't know what's going to happen. And then also yeah. I think like a lot of times, especially in short stories, the answer is sort of in the story if you just read closely enough. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know why it ended that way, you might not have just read the story close enough. Does right. that, is that too mean?
No, I mean, it's probably true for me 100 times out of 100. So
yeah.
I always feel like I'm too dumb for everything I do, but
yeah. But you said you liked the open-ended thing, so I don't. I didn't.
I
mean
do
it as a
no. I know. No. No, but I also, I mean, I agree with you, but also I, you know, self-deprecation, etc. But like, I think that, you know, oftentimes, like when it comes to, I don't know, like every time, like a book or a media franchise, if we will, like expands the universe, I start finding everything about it less satisfying. Mm-hmm. Like the more answers I get about everything just ends up feeling worse. My go-to example, and I'm sure I've said it on the podcast like a million times, is like when J.K. Rowling did the short story or answered the question or whatever about like before Hogwarts had plumbing, that like wizards just used to drop trow and take a shit in the middle of the hallway and then they would just disappear it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
It's like, that's, that didn't help.
Yeah.
that doesn't make me feel better about this. But then there's also the times where it's just like, you realize that like so much of the interesting thing about a story, that you, if it's horror or if it's science fiction or whatever, like so much of the intrigue is in the mystery of it. So that like, if the mystery goes away, it, for me, it always just feels pointless. Like no matter how much I want an answer, sometimes it just feels better to, like, you know, every time I feel like I've been given the answer, it doesn't make it better. It doesn't improve my experience of it. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is that like part of me kind of thinks, and this is just like my own headcanon or whatever of this book, imagine people having canon about this book, but that like it does somehow actually bring them back together, even though I think it tells you that it doesn't.
Yeah.
And that like Alina doing that thing, like maybe she is going to be the thing that like brings them back to each other. Like, is she the reason that everyone's going to be saved? Kind of like you were saying. I don't know. And is part of that saving, stitching these lives or like these two timelines back together in a way that brings them together again? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the thing too, is I get it. Sometimes I feel like, wait, do I really understand what this book is saying? But when a book or a story really, like, especially short stories, I would say way more than not full novels. But if I'm being like spoon fed, like, hey, here is what you're supposed to get, here's the moral of the story, that mm-hmm. gets me. Like, that bothers me because I'm like, do you think I'm stupid? You know?
I know.
but yes, I totally get. Sometimes it is like, am I getting it right? And I guess possibly some of the answer is, does it really matter whether you're getting it right or not?
Right.
And right. Yeah, I don't know. Either like Alina is the one who's going to save them and stitch the universes together, or she is just a teen girl who thinks she can save the world, as a lot of teens do and young people, which God bless them. Good. You know, they are not bad at all. But I don't know. I mean, what does it mean?
One thing I will say about this book, if I have a criticism, is that it does sometimes become very confusing if we're talking about Anna or if we're talking about Laura. I couldn't keep the two names straight in my head. And because basically you see when the disappearance happens and then you kind of catapult like 20 years into the future. Mm-hmm. So Laura is an adult and she's pregnant with her first child. And then you also see Anna, who of course is 20 years older than Laura would be 20 years in the future, but she has a family as well. And so like, because they're two women who like live in the same city and do sort of similar things. Laura is an English teacher, I think, or a literature teacher, maybe. And Anna is a novelist who uses a pseudonym, not unlike Elena Ferrante, which I thought was an interesting little touch to throw in there. But so they kind of have like these similar sort of literary interests in their lives. And then, of course, they talk about the music. And so sometimes I would be completely confused as to who was who.
Yeah, I know.
And I think that is my one concern with recommending this, which, I mean, I would never not recommend it. But I would say, you know, it does take a little bit of brain power to keep them straight.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I don't know if that was sort of intentional to kind of show like these two people were connected. And so That's why they ended up being kind of similar, just like how a lot of people end up being kind of having the same traits as their parents, you know? But yeah, I got that, mm-hmm. especially when it came to the piece of music. I thought for the longest time, Laura was the one who didn't play the piece. And then when she saw the music, I was like, oh, wait, she's the other one.
Yeah.
Should I talk a little bit about my weird experience?
Sure. Yeah. I don't know how we want to do it exactly, but
two things I'll be vague on. So we were taking the train to Chicago. We both live in Michigan. I live a little bit further east. So I was on the train first, and it goes through all these small towns that I've literally never heard of. And I had looked at my weather app, saw we were in a particular town, and then I pulled out Present Tense Machine, which I had had to request outside of my library system from another library in Michigan. Uh-huh. And it had been from the library in the exact town that I was
going through. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And again, it's a town I've never heard of in my life, which, you know, there's a lot of them like that. But so that was the first thing that was really weird. I think we both probably did this. I kept reading. So the word that Anna reads is, I don't know how to pronounce this. It's a Norwegian word.
I believe it means garden.
But, and then she reads it the wrong way, as in Tardgard. That's how it looks. I know I'm not pronouncing the vowels correctly. And I kept reading it as tardigrade, which is a little water bears. So I was misreading the word that she misread.
Yeah.
And then this is the part I'm going to be super vague about. Last summer, I saw a person in Chicago who was not a person like that I knew in real life. And it was a very odd situation.
Yes.
And then while I'm on the train, the train was really full. So we weren't sitting together. And this person was speaking behind me about certain topics that sort of related to something with us. I am so sorry for being so vague, but... and then you were like, is it this person who I had seen, who I'd run into in Chicago? And I realized after listening to this person continually talk on the phone that it was the same person. Chicago is a city. I don't even know how big like the whole Chicagoland area is. 8 million, 10 million? I don't know.
When you Google just the population of Chicago, it's like 2.87 million people or something like that.
So the fact that I was somehow in contact with this person who, again, I don't know in real life at all, never expected to see in the first place, much less the second place, that's really strange. And then this is so stupid, but when we were in our hotel room, we got a falafel.
No. Cause when you got on the train platform, so Becca had been telling me the day before, cause I was like, what bags do I pack? Like what kind of bag do I bring? Like suitcase wise, et cetera. And she's like, I'm going to bring my carry-on sized suitcase. And she's like, it's hot pink, because I always figure like no one will get it mixed up at the, you know, baggage claim at the airport. And that's why it's hot pink. And then we're on the platform and Becca looks over and she's like, that's the exact same bag as mine. Yes. another woman had the same exact hot pink, like same exact brand. And
exact.
Everything.
This, yes. Bag. I forgot about that one. So that was weird. And so the last one, which is the stupidest one, is we were in the hotel room. We had been out. We went and got falafel. I think you got shawarma. That's not important. We're eating.
It is.
Eating our sandwiches in the hotel room. And I crumpled up the...
Watching a bad movie.
Yes. So I crumpled up the bag, and the garbage bin for the hotel was like sort of under the, like the counter, you know, there's like a counter and then the TV is on the wall, and it was like halfway under it. And I was like, I'm just going to throw the bag and get it near the bin, so I'll throw it away later. But I made it perfectly into the bin and I was so excited.
And Becca couldn't have done that.
No.
Again, if she tried.
I was just trying to do it in my office yesterday, and I could not for the life of me get this crumpled paper in the bin, and it was closer. But anyway, that was my weird break, and I think possibly I'm in a new universe now.
Yeah, and it's all because I picked this book. Yeah. I think. But yeah, what was it that? Because you went home and you told Zach everything, and then he, what did he say to you? Something about some theory of time. Oh, yes. Or whatever.
He said that, like, when that kind of thing happens, supposedly, this is all like theories that people have, it's not necessarily real, that it ripples in both directions. So I could, like, I have been experiencing like memory loss, not like actual like forgetting who people are, but I just like don't remember huge like things that happened in my past, like conversations. People will be like, yeah, when we went to this concert, and I have no memory of it. Anyway, so there's more proof.
Which could be COVID, even though you've never technically had it. It could be the last several years of our lives that are just like a big memory hole.
Everybody who's listening to that is like, yeah, everybody experiences that now.
Messed. Disabling events. But anyway, it was a big weird coincidence fest for you in particular, for me a little bit, because what a funny, I don't know, it's always really funny when you have like these things that happen, like when you're reading a book, and like my example would be that, like, earlier this year, I read Fight Night by Miriam Taves, and in it, the narrator talks a little bit about a song, Chiquiquita by ABBA, and later that day that I read it, like maybe even half an hour later, there was a story about Chiquiquita on NPR, and I was like, what are the odds?
Those are the things, I think that's it, is like, those are the things, because I'm pretty much like, I am not very, I think, I don't know a better word for this, but like woo-woo, right? I believe everything is a coincidence. Mm-hmm. Nothing has a meaning, you know? So normally when those little things happen, I'm very quick to just like dismiss it, you know? Oh, that's just the thing. Right. So it's just kind of funny how many little coincidences.
To have like a pile of coincidences all in the one same day.
And all when I'm reading a book about like alternate universes, like the whole thing is just very funny. And would I have liked this book as much if I didn't experience all those? I
who knows,
still think I would have, because it's a really good book. But
yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of other stuff in this book too. We didn't really talk about the linguistics of it. Anna goes on, and I mentioned that she's a novelist, and she goes on, she's trying to write a novel about language, and she's sort of really struggling with it. But a lot of what she's thinking about is how language came to be. Did language come to be like all at once? Is the beginning of like human history or being human like the inception of language also, like a lot of stuff that I can't really quite think about or talk about because I don't think I know enough about it. But like it was just interesting to read about like this person who went through this event that she doesn't even realize that she went through, then like be so drawn to this idea of, you know, language and what it means and how it makes us human and etc. I don't know. I mean, I love Arrival, like you mentioned earlier, which is all about language and theories of language. And whether or not linguists agree with all of these theories, they are the ones that I find very captivating.
Yeah. So I do. I love linguistics. I took, I think, two linguistics classes for my English degree. And I wish if I could go back, I would just be a linguist. Well, I probably can't because I can't speak any other languages. But I do wish that I knew more about it.
If you could do it over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do wish that I knew more about it. And it's always so interesting to me when you bring language into sort of like the meaning of why we do what we do. What makes us human?
Right.
You know, the ability we communicate about communication. Like, I don't think any other thing that communicates does that, right? Like, I can tell you I don't understand what you're saying, you know? Yeah.
Right.
So I love anything that explores those ideas, even though absolutely did I understand totally what this book was talking about with language? No, I did not. But I love reading about it.
Yeah. I guess the idea is like, did the human mind create language, or did language create the human mind, like as we know it? Just kind of a thing that I have thought about. It used to be like long ago when I worked in retail, and I would have to count the drawers at the end of the night, and I'd, you know, be sitting in some office somewhere with a safe and be matching numbers and stuff. And I would stop and I would think, can I count without numbers? that was a thing that I used to, like, I don't know, just try to puzzle myself with, like, can you count without words? I don't know.
I mean,
it's maybe a really dumb thing to think about, but like, you can kind of have symbols that represent words, like physical symbols, like your fingers or whatever, but like, you still need something in your brain to be able to grasp in order to keep going forward with the numbers. I don't know.
That I know. This is the stuff that
this is a high thought. I have not had any weed lately.
This is the stuff that I love to think about, because then there's like base 10 and base 20 and like different languages.
Oh God, Josh, that's like Josh's favorite party trick. But yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That kind of stuff. Again, do I understand half of it? Probably not, but I absolutely love like learning or just hearing about it. We'll see what the next book, Babel 17. I mean, that promises to be almost hopefully completely about language.
We'll find out. Maybe it's nothing.
Yeah.
But I suppose because she talks about the Tower of Babel, yes, too. So it's gotta be. Yeah, they've got to be related in terms of like, they probably do both talk about language, like, but
thematically, yeah, maybe a little bit, but
yeah. I don't know. It was fun. I also love the title of this book, Present Tense Machine.
Yeah.
Which is also a misreading. It says something, I don't know, I don't remember what else it says, but it's something that Laura, I believe, reads off of the side of a street sweeper.
Precise.
Got some other.
Yeah, precise something. I can't remember the second word, machine.
Yeah, but sweepy something, but yeah.
All right. Yes, this was good. I loved it, and it's short enough to where the sort of moments of where you're just sort of hearing about Laura think about her husband, that doesn't get too long, in my opinion, because we're talking a lot about like the big concepts, but there's also just a lot about people just kind of, all right, what am I going to do today? You know?
Right. Yeah.
But
yeah. And also, if you're one of the people who, embarrassingly, like me, it's important to you that you read a book that not a lot of other people have heard of or read. This kind of fulfills that.
Yes.
That like stupid hole inside of you that makes you feel cooler than everyone else for a little while.
We looked extremely cool on the train.
Oh my God.
To Chicago.
On the train, both. Or on the way back, where we were both sitting next to each other reading it.
Yes. That actually probably flips it and makes it like very cringe.
I wonder if that's like the only time in history that two people have read this exact book right next to each other.
Probably.
All right, that's enough, I suppose. Thanks for listening to The Bookstore.
If you would like to support the podcast beyond listening, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thebookstore or rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Like I said, thanks to our new patron first, Sunny. I hope you liked this episode. It was kind of all over the place, but we enjoyed it. And we will probably, hopefully, sometime this month have a new Patreon episode, if not about the Left Behind book. Hopefully we'll do our Chicago trip and go more into detail about that.
And you can find all of the ways to contact us. Our email and social media are at thebookstorepodcast.com. We no longer have a phone line. I did get an email from somebody about that, because nobody was calling us. But if you have an interest to call and just speak, or you know, speak at us with your voice, you can do that. You can just take a voice memo on your phone and email it to us. We will accept that. You can find our email again at thebookstorepodcast.com.
And I will say, we really have completely dropped off of Twitter or X. We're pretty bad in general at social media. And
it does not spark joy.
Yeah. And that social media platform in particular is not one that we're really prioritizing. So I think probably in the future we're going to phase it out. But yes, we do think about making TikToks a lot. We don't make them, but
yeah,
we
I
think
do.
About it.
One thing that the youth do not tell you is how long it takes to make a TikTok.
Yes.
Or maybe that's just me. Maybe every time I turn on the camera, I don't remember how to speak, but
yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, as discussed earlier, our next book is going to be Babel 17 by Samuel R. Delaney. You can find it at your local bookstore or library, or on Hoopla, perhaps, and read along with us.
And the bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becky Young and Corinne Keener. Technical and production support is provided by Josh Bourdon and Zach Titus.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Actually, it will literally be next Tuesday, probably.
Oh, all right.
Because we are off by a week.
All right.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, it depends. It depends on when you listen to this. If you listen to this before this Tuesday, then maybe not.
We'll see you when we see anyway. You.
Yep.
Bye. This is a mess.